Hello, welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger. We're going to be looking at the pericopes for Proper 6, or which is probably sixth Sunday after Pentecost. The Old Testament reading is from Isaiah 66, beginning at verse 10. Isaiah 66 is the final chapter of Isaiah's glorious vision. In this last chapter, finally, the wicked and the righteous are separated finally and permanently. God's judgment comes, which means great peace and wholeness to his people, and as well as joy. It's a chapter where lots of the many themes in Isaiah are entwined and brought to a climax. But leading right up to these verses, I want to especially highlight, before we start in with verse 10, just a couple of passages just previous in Isaiah. In Isaiah 65, God is speaking of his recreation of Zion, or his recreation of Jerusalem. And he calls on the people saying, "Be glad and rejoice forever in what I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem to be a joy and her people to be a gladness. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people." So God's saving, recreating work will cause Jerusalem itself and its people to become a joy for others. He also calls upon those people and Jerusalem to rejoice. And he says that he himself is rejoicing over Jerusalem. So there's this idea that in all of this, the people are entering into God's own joy over his people. That'll be very significant in our verses, beginning with 66:10. Also, take note of Isaiah 66, verse 5. Isaiah 66 begins with a reference, most commentators think, to the restoration after the exile. It makes allusion to the temple, but also to the importance of right worship, not merely formal outward worship, but righteousness and faith of the heart. But then it turns in chapter 5 to this theme: "Your brothers who hate you," in verse 5, "your brothers who hate you and cast you out for my name's sake have said, 'Let Yahweh be glorified that we may see your joy.' But they will be ashamed," or "but it is they who will be ashamed." There's a sense that the people in Jerusalem, the faithful of Yahweh, are being mocked by their enemies, by those who hate them and cast them out because of their faith in Yahweh. They're being mocked with these words, "Let Yahweh be glorified that we may see your joy." In other words, you're holding on to all these promises. Let's see some action. Let's actually see Yahweh do something, and then we'll see how happy you are. Apparently, they aren't particularly happy. In verse 10, they're going to be addressed as those who mourn because of Jerusalem. But God promises in verse 5 that it is these mockers who in the end will be ashamed. And then finally, also notice verses 7 to 9, where Isaiah employs, or God speaking through Isaiah, speaks about labor pains and the delivery of children. And he uses this metaphor in a number of ways. Ultimately, he notes how quickly this birth is going to happen. There's pains right now, but the joyous thing that's coming, the birth of the new Jerusalem, is going to happen more quickly than they might think. "Shall a nation be brought forth in a moment?" Yahweh says in verse 8. "For as soon as Zion was in labor, she brought forth her children." And God promises in verse 9 that he is surely going to bring forth this child. He will surely deliver. This imagery of birth and delivery leads into then to verse 10, God's promise that he will bring about from pain this joyous new thing. And then we begin with verse 10. "Simku et Yerushalayim, v'gilu va kol oheveha." Begins with the imperative from the verb samach, rejoice, et Yerushalayim, rejoice with Jerusalem, v'gilu va, and shout for joy, from the verb gil, shout for joy, either in her, the preposition be, or possibly this is a bet of specification, meaning rejoice about her or you could say, I guess here, rejoice over her. It's the subject of the rejoicing. Either one would be fitting here, either rejoice in her or rejoice about her. And who is this addressed to? Kol oheveha, all the lovers, all the ones loving her. Participle from the verb ahav, with a feminine third person subject on the end. All the ones loving her, all those who love her. And now we have a parallel line, the second part of verse 10. Sisu ita masos kol hamit abalim aleha. The verb cease is really another synonym to samach and gil. It's a word of rejoicing. You could say be glad or again rejoice. Ita, with her. Masos. It's an interesting Hebrew construction here. Sisu masos. Masos is the noun form of the same verb. So this is a cognate accusative. You could translate it, rejoice with her a joy, or be glad with her a gladness. Or you could also translate it as this noun here, masos, as an accusative acting as an adverb. Probably an accusative of manner, an adverbial accusative of manner. Rejoice with her, be glad with her gladly or joyfully. And again, it specifies who's being addressed here. Kol hamith abalim aleha. All the ones avaling in the hithpael. Aval means to mourn, and in the hithpael, probably here has kind of an iterative sense. Not just mourning for a short time or mourning once, but continuing to mourn or going through the rites of mourning. All those who go about mourning aleha, concerning her or over her. Again, verse 10 then, in the context of the preceding verses, invites these who love Jerusalem and mourn over her to join in God's own joy over his people in light of what he's on the verge of bringing about. And to speak to those who love her and to those who mourn over her suggests that the righteous or the faithful in Zion are not in good times. So this is spoken to people who are in the midst of mourning. There's plenty of reason in the preceding 65 chapters for the people to be mourning over Jerusalem. There have been all kinds of pronouncements of judgment. Chapter 40, of course, begins the theme of great comfort, which comes and goes through the latter half of Isaiah, and this verse is very much a verse of comfort. We're going to see the verb nakam in the PL come up a number of times now. All right, rejoice, be glad. Why? Verse 11. Lema'an tinaku u shevatem mishod tan kumeha. Rejoice, lema'an, in order that you may nurse or suck, yanak. This is a second person plural form, so the people are being addressed in the plural, in order that you all may nurse, and that you may sava, be satisfied. Mishod, from a breast, tan kumeha, of her consolations. This is a noun, her consolations. It's in construct with the word for breast, which precedes it, so they are nursing from Jerusalem's breast, the breast of her consolations. You can probably take this as an attributive genitive, from her consoling breast. And now another line again in almost perfect parallel with the first line of verse 11. Lema'an tamotsu v'hit anagtem miziz kavoda. In order that you may, and here the verb is mazaz, it's a geminate form, it looks kind of like a hollow root, the way it's formed there, but you see the dagesh in the sade of tamotsu. It's a geminate form, it's a hapax, I believe. It means, it's basically a synonym of yanak, to suck or to nurse, but it has the sense of to drain out or to drink deeply. Holiday in his lexicon says to quaff, which is an interesting verb. So in order that you may drink deeply, and another hithpael form now here, anag means in the hithpael to take delight in or make merry over. So it's in the parallelism, it's lined up with be satisfied. So the first line of verse 11, in order that you may nurse and be satisfied. And then the second line, in order that you may drink deeply and take delight in or be delighted in. And then another prepositional phrase, Miziz Kavoda, from the abundance of her glory. From the abundance of her glory. Now, the noun ziz, there's a certain amount of uncertainty about the meaning of this. It is also suggested from cognate languages that it could possibly mean breast. A number of cognate languages have the sense of udder, like an animal's udder or teat for this. And the translation would be a little strange. It would be taking then kavoda in parallel with the previous line as a attributive genitive. It would be from her glorious breast, another synonym. But I like, or I think it's more fitting in with the text of Isaiah here to read it as from the abundance of her glory, because it highlights this kavod, which has been a major theme here in the last part of Isaiah. So, in order that you may drink deeply and be delighted from the abundance of her glory. All right, verse 12. Ki ko amar Yahweh. Why should they rejoice, and why will they be drinking deeply and being satisfied? Verse 12 gives the reason. Ki. Because Yahweh has said, or because Yahweh here says, Hineni noteh eleha kanahar shalom. Behold, I am neta'ing, I am extending or stretching forth eleha to her, to Jerusalem, Kenahar, like a river. Okay, there's some suspense here. He hasn't told you what he's extending yet. He saves that for the end. I am extending to her like a river, two intervening prepositional phrases, and then you finally get the object, shalom, emphatic at the end there. I am extending to her peace. The word shalom in Hebrew, of course, is a very broad and rich term. It means more than just the absence of conflict. It means completeness, fullness, prosperity, as well as security. And now a parallel phrase, U-kanahal shotef kavod goyim. And like a wadi, a nachal, not just any wadi, but a flooding one, shetef is the word for flood, a word for flood. And here as a noun, or as a verb, it means to overflow or to flood. So an overflowing wadi or a flooding wadi, and you supply the verb from the previous line, he will stretch forth to her the glory of the nations. So the glory of the nations God will stretch forth to her, like an overflowing wadi. These wadis are sometimes dry stream beds with nothing flowing in them, but in the rainy season, all of a sudden they're gushing, torrential sources of water. So that's the picture here, is that this peace and the wealth of the nations won't just trickle in, but they will gush into Zion, so that she may drink deeply from Jerusalem. And that's the next verb here. You'll notice the atnak comes after the next word, Vinaktem, and you will nurse. And you will nurse. I will do all of this, cause this peace and the wealth of the nations, or the glory of the nations, to gush to you so that you may nurse. Al tzad tenaseu v'al birkayim tesha'ashau. Two prepositional phrases here with the preposition all. Upon tzad, tzad almost sounds like the English word side, which is what it means, upon the side. Oftentimes when you use body parts in Hebrew, you don't use a pronoun with them. So probably the sense here is upon her side, upon Jerusalem's side. you will be carried. The verb is nasa. It's a niphal form. Tinaseu, you will be carried upon her side. Picture is a little child here, right? You will nurse of all this overflowing goodness. You'll be carried on her side. Va'al birchayim, notice the dual ending there, birchayim, upon the knees, the two knees, her two knees. And then we have this interesting form, tasha'u. The verb here is sha'ah, it's a geminate, but notice the way that the initial consonant is reduplicated there, so that you get that sha-sha. This is a pulpal form, which a pilpal form is not all that unusual. That's the geminate verb equivalent of the pl. But this is passive, so it's a pulpal form. And the meaning is a little bit uncertain here. This is the action sha'ah is what God's consolations do to the psalmist's soul in the Psalms. God's consolations sha'ah the psalmist. This is also what the little child does in Isaiah 11:6. The little child, a nursing child, will sha'ah over the nest of the cobra. So what exactly that means, we aren't sure. Maybe something like play or pat or bounce up and down or console, something along those lines. But the picture is a little child who nurses, who's carried on the arm, and who is somethinged on the knees. Consoled, bounced about, something. It's a warm image. It's a safe and a joyful image of a little child being cared for. Verse 13, Ka'ish asher imo tanakamenu, like a man who his mother comforts him. Here we have the PL of nakam, that enu ending is a third masculine singular object suffix. Probably here, ish doesn't mean man as in an adult male, but probably just one, like one who. Like one who his mother comforts him. That way we can keep the image as a little child rather than someone who comes home to his mom after he's lost his job at age 55 or something. Like one who his mother comforts him. Kain anoki an kenkem. Thus I myself, notice the superfluous in first-person pronoun, thus I myself, or in the same way, I myself will comfort you. How is Yahweh going to care for and comfort his mourning people like a mother comforts her child? Uvirushalayim, and then the last word of the verse, notice, is below Jerusalem, and near the margin there, tanukamu. This is a pu'al form from nakam, so it's related again to the pl meaning, to comfort, but it's passive. You will be comforted. And you will be comforted in Jerusalem. Although notice the bait on the front of Jerusalem here could again either be locative, in Jerusalem, or it could be a bait of specification concerning or about Jerusalem. Or, about Jerusalem. Over Jerusalem. You will be comforted over Jerusalem. Final verse, verse 14. What are you guys laughing about?
Watch your time, pal.
Oh, yeah.
You're in my time.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Take or all the time you want. We love you.
We're just doing 20 minutes in the summertime, aren't we?
We're 22.
I know. I was thinking 25. All right, we'll see how fast we can get through verse 14. Ura'item v'sas Livakim. And you will look, or you will see, and again we have the verb cease here, be glad or rejoice, and your heart will rejoice, and your bones, the atmotekim, your bones, kadesha tif rakna, like grass will flourish. That's an interesting image. Your bones will flourish like grass. This flourish or bud verb, this is what Aaron's rod does. It's what is not going to happen to the people after the vineyard warning in Isaiah 5. But But then in Isaiah 27 and in Isaiah 35, the verb comes up again, and there's all this budding, flourishing language, which is very familiar language in Isaiah. Here it's their bones that are going to bud and flourish. V'noda'ah yad Yahweh et avadav. And the hand of Yahweh will be known, made known to his servants, v'tza'am, but he will curse, from tza'am, direct object, his enemies. So again, this separation between the righteous and the wicked that's emphasized at the end. We will save the reflection for this, and we'll do it silently in our own hearts as we move on to the gospel reading from Luke chapter 10. Dr. Gary.